Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu.
With a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening. This morning comes from the Gospel of John in the 21st chapter. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias, and he showed himself in this way. Gathered there together were Simon Peter, Thomas called the Twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples. Simon Peter said to them, "I am going fishing," and they said to him, "We'll go with you." And they went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Just after daybreak, Jesus stood on the beach, but the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. And Jesus said to them, "Children, you have no fish, have you?" And they answered him, "No." And he said to them, "Cast the net to the right side of the boat, and you'll find some." So they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it in because there were so many fish. That disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." And when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on some clothes, for he was naked, and jumped into the sea. Just going to leave that there, Emily and I are honest. But the other disciples came in the boat, dragging the net full of fish, for they were not far from the land, only about 100 yards off. And when they had gone ashore, they saw a charcoal fire there with fish on it and bread. And Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish that you have just caught." So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore full of large fish, 153 of them. And though there were so many, the net was not torn. And Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." Now none of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" Because they knew it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them and did the same with the fish. And this was now the third time that Jesus appeared to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" And he said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And Jesus said to him, "Feed my lambs." A second time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And he said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And Peter felt hurt because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he replied, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." And Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt and to go wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go." He said this to indicate the kind of death by which he would glorify God. And after this, he said to him, "Follow me."
If I should fly beyond the dawn, the darkness will not overcome. If I lie down in deepest night, still you are there, my Lord, my light. Still you are there, my Lord, my light. My Lord, my light.
It's not so unusual to be familiar, so familiar, like with a story that you find yourself, as soon as it starts, like checking out because you think, "Oh, I already know this one." And That happens a lot, I think, in church, or it can. It happens definitely with the Good Samaritan. Everybody thinks they know that story, right? So you pull out your phone. It happens with the prodigal son. I know. There, but for the grace of God. It's just that I'm never being preached to out there very often. So it happens also, I think, with the stories of the disciples after Easter. And last week we had one of them, Doubting Thomas, right? And today we have this long passage featuring Peter. In her latest book, which was called Inspired, Rachel Held Evans reminded me this week of that sense of everything's familiar when she wrote this. Anyone who has loved the Bible as much as I have, and who has lost it and found it again, knows how a relationship with the Bible can be as real and as complicated as a relationship with a family member or a close friend. So I think if Facebook was around in Jesus's day, that sometime in the weeks right after Easter, the status update for the the disciples and Jesus would shift from in a relationship to it's complicated. I went in there this week. There's a whole lot more choices now. I don't know if you've checked that out. Holy mackerel. But I'm sticking with it's complicated. And this morning, I want us to try to appreciate the complexity that is our friend Peter, at least Peter in the Gospel of John. See, some scholars say that chapter 21 of the Gospel of John is a later addition to it. And that it's like not written by the author of John chapters 1 through 20. And rather than debate this, I choose to affirm what New Testament scholar Caroline Lewis shared with us here last Thursday. Fangirl moment. She stood right here. I love her. I've watched her forever. She stood here and like used one of our mics. Here's what she said. What we know is that every manuscript of John that was passed around from the very beginning included chapter 21. So whether it was added later or it was in the original, she said, what's important is that followers of Jesus heard it read to them from the very earliest of times. So just as Thomas is remembered as Thomas the Doubter, so too is Peter branded as Peter the Denier, right? And while both names are earned, there's more to the story because it's complicated. So let me first of all affirm my own appreciation and be upfront about it with Peter. I like Peter. He acts first and he thinks later. I have great appreciation for people like that. Instead of letting Jesus like just wash his feet, you know, on that last week, Peter wants a bath that includes his head, his hands, all of him. He's like, I'm all in. Just wash all of me, Lord. Instead of being strategic with the disciples in the garden as soldiers close in on Jesus, Peter strides out of the garden, cuts the right ear off Malchus. I just love that scene. I know, it's bad. I might have said something to that effect about the United Methodist Church last week, right? Ooh. Instead of patiently rowing the boat back to the beach, he dives in with his clothes on, we don't know about the naked thing, and beats everyone ashore. His behavior, it's brash, it's challenging, it's very impulsive, and it also includes the way he denies Jesus not once, but three times. And these three denials are why the traditional read on Peter is that he needs Jesus to forgive him. So it was surprising when Caroline Lewis was talking to us. She calls John the best gospel because that's how she did her dissertation. She made certain we noticed in her lecture that nowhere in the story of John does Jesus ever utter the words, I forgive you? So I had to check, and she's right. If Peter doesn't need Jesus to forgive him, then what does he need? Well, Caroline suggested that Peter needs to forgive himself. And I kind of came alive at that moment when she said that. As a person who often acts and speaks before I think, the forgiveness I most need is my own. And why is that? It's because I'm trying to be okay with my natural born self. I am impulsive. I am passionate. I get things wrong every once in a while. And I feel really like a jerk and stupid, and I can hardly stand myself. That's how it is. So I get why Peter needs to forgive himself. And why not? Because he will really never escape that garden moment at the end of Jesus' life on earth. He denies Jesus, not once, not twice, but three times. But Caroline Lewis had us review that scene as well. She said, a rereading of Peter's denial in the garden in John exposes his true rejection. It's that of his own identity. The question asked of Peter is not in John as it is in the Synoptic Gospels, do you know the man? That's in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And Peter responds in there, I don't know the man. But in John's Gospel, the question put to Peter is, are you one of his disciples? And Peter's response is, I am not. Peter denies his own reality. I am not. That's heavy. That's heavy. Lots of people have held that against him forever. But what we hear this morning is that Jesus doesn't even go there. Jesus isn't interested in the denials. He's never one to play the shame game. He's not inviting even repentance at this moment. He is handing his ministry over to Peter. Think about that. In my mind, he's saying, Peter, focus right here. Do you love me? Peter says, yes. Feed my lambs. Focus. Peter, do you love me? Yes, yes, I know just what to do. I'm going to tell you first, tend my sheep. Yes, okay, focus. Peter, focus. I can just feel his excitement. He's already ready to go. Do you love me? Yes, Jesus, it's never about love. I just get confused and I get excited and I get scared and I let those feelings guide me. And you remember what happened in the garden? Oh, you predicted it. And even though you did, I stepped right into it. Oh, Jesus. Peter, focus. Dude, feed my sheep. Wait, what? You're talking to me? Could you write that down? Like, could you just write it down so I can refer to it later? Did you just say, I am supposed to feed your sheep? No one can outbrave you, Jesus. Without you, I'm supposed to feed your sheep. I'm scared. I can't do it. I am so not you. I actually am no one. I am not worthy of that. Jesus needs Peter to be the shepherd for the sheep now. Jesus needs Peter to claim who he is, to claim his identity. Peter is not no one to Jesus. Peter to Jesus is his disciple. And Jesus knows it's up to Peter now. So see, I think Caroline was right. Peter doesn't deny Jesus in John. Peter denies himself, his own identity as a follower of Jesus. Denying our identity is all too often a lot of our common realities. I don't want to speak for you, but I've been around. Why do we do that? Maybe we deny who we are because we worry that we're not going to meet expectations of those around us. Maybe we deny who we are because we're afraid to disappoint people. Maybe we deny who we are because we feel like we're going to get judged. And then if we're judged, we're dismissed. And then we feel rejected. Maybe we deny who we are because we don't believe that we will actually ever really be loved if people know who we truly are. So instead of claiming our identity, which is a beloved child of God, we don our masks and we live in the life of who we think others need us to be instead of claiming our own identity. And we play it safe around a lot of people in our lives. And we go around pretending this is us. And you know what? I don't actually think anyone should apologize for doing that. That might surprise you. Because as Brené Brown writes in her fabulous book, Gifts of Imperfection, our stories are not meant for everyone. Hearing them is actually a privilege. And we should always ask ourselves this before we share. Who has the right, who has earned it, to hear my story? If we have one or maybe two people in our lives who can sit with us and hold space for our shame stories and love us for our strengths and our struggles, we are incredibly lucky. And if we have a friend or a small group of friends or family who embraces our imperfections, our vulnerabilities and power, and fills us with a sense that we actually belong, we are incredibly lucky, she says. Peter is standing around a charcoal fire on the beach with the risen one. Has the risen one finally earned the right to hear his story this time? Because last time Peter wasn't ready, and he denied it. He denied who he was. I can only assume that that's still fresh in his memory as he's standing there with the risen one. And he's inside going, can I do it? Is it going to be bad again? Will this time be different? You all know we're using the television series called This Is Us. With our worship series and looking at the flashbacks in the Gospel of John. And that series, This Is Us, goes a really long way in showing us what embracing our imperfections can look like. And I know not everyone has seen it, but I just want to review. Oh, there's Brené. These are the characters in This Is Us. And this is the Pearson family. And in the scene that you're about to see, Beth and Randall on the left, they're not in the scene, but they are have just had their first baby, spoiler, season two. And Kevin is the brother on the top right, and Kate is his twin sister in the bottom. And in this scene that you're going to see, it's between Kevin and Kate. Kate is looking for love in all the wrong places. And Kevin has just arrived having deeply betrayed his roommate and his friend, really. And as you will see, they find Kevin and Kate their way, I think, to claiming their true identity and sharing the truth of their story with each other and making a plan as how they're going to move forward. Let's watch.
Is a huge house.
Yeah.
What a day, huh?
Epic day, yeah, you know.
We finally have proof that Randall had sex at least one time in his life. So that's exciting.
Yeah, everything is falling into place for him. Mm-hmm. Which is great, right? Because if Randall figures his crap out, we're like 5 years away from you and me figuring out ours. Right? And I met that great new guy.
Yeah, and I'm crushing it, right, in L.A.? I'm telling you, it's all happening for us, you know?
It is.
It's happening for us in the 20s.
Mm-hmm. Crushing the 20s.
Crushing the 20s. Bam. Mm. I haven't had an audition in like 6 months.
The new guy's married.
Oh.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Give a little more.
Okay. Married, huh?
But he's nice, which makes it harder. He asks questions. He knows my class schedule.
I mean, come on, that's a low bar.
You really haven't had an audition in 6 months?
No, it's been more like a year, actually. Where are you at? I mean, what are you still sitting in your car, eating fast food, staring at where the house used to be? He's gone. Okay, and he's not coming back. And even if you sit there in the exact same spot that you were when he left, he's not coming back.
I know.
And he wouldn't want you to stay. Not if there was nothing for you there. You know what he want for you? Everything. Maybe I'll take an acting class, you know, it's join a crappy improv troupe. I guess I could do that.
That's the spirit. Yes. I bet you're hilarious.
I'm probably a pretty funny guy.
We don't need love and belonging and story catching from everybody in our lives. But we need it from at least one person. If we have that one person or that small group, maybe it's our kitchen table of confidants, the best way to acknowledge these connections is to acknowledge our worthiness. And if we're working towards relationships based in love and belonging and story, we have to start in the same place, which is, I am worthy. Has Jesus earned the right to hear your story? Kate and Kevin say he would want everything for you. They're talking about their dad, Jack. But this morning, we are talking about the risen one. The good news for us is that the risen one wants everything for us. The good news is that Jesus does not leave us alone. And in those moments, we get a glimpse of that or say yes to that. That's when our story meets God's story in the risen one, this side of Easter. If Peter is the rock upon which the church is built, then there's hope for all of us. Because this is us, right? He's one of us. Because he remains God's chosen rock, whether he's acting like a cornerstone or a stumbling block. And because Peter shows us that blessedness is less about perfection than about willingness. That what counts is to risk our own answers, to go ahead and try to get up one more time than we fall down on our faces. The story of Peter's last encounter with Jesus is told not by Matthew, but by John. It takes place on a beach where the risen Lord has just cooked breakfast for his disciples. As soon as the meal is over, Jesus turns to Peter and asks him not once, but three times, "Do you love me?" And three times Peter answers, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And three times Jesus replies, in some fashion, "Feed my sheep." Which maybe leads all of us to think that maybe the final answer that Jesus seeks from those of us who love him is not an answer that is actually spoken out loud, so much as it is an answer that is lived out. And that the real truth about who Jesus is for each one of us doesn't even show up on our lips. It shows up in our lives. So may we all trust the risen one who meets Peter on the shore and tells him, and in that way is telling all of us, "I believe in you. I know you are who you are. And I love you. And yes, you are exactly the disciple I need, the disciple the world needs for God to love this whole world." Amen.